Drive Time with DeRussia, hour three on a very busy day here on CCO Radio. We're watching severe weather, newsroom keeping you updated on that. And we're, of course, continuing to update you on the fast-moving developments about a suspect who is now in federal custody and was, today we learned, trying to kill four lawmakers. Not two, not just two houses. Vance Belter went to four different houses in the early morning hours of Saturday. And he killed Melissa and Mark Hortman. And he almost killed John and Yvette Hoffman. We want to get into a lot of the details about this. And let's do it right now with the DeRussia Hour News headlines leak.
Now, time to get you caught up on some of the biggest stories of the day. These are the DeRussia Hour headlines.
Good evening. Our top story.
This just in.
Our top story.
We begin tonight with.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin tonight.
We begin with the lead.
And as you heard here on CCO Radio, within the last half hour, acting U.S. Attorney Joe Thompson has taken over the prosecution of the Minnesota assassin. Federal government has him in custody. Last night, so many of us watched as we saw a manhunt that lasted almost 2 days come to an end. And the end was maybe not what many would have guessed. Vance Belter arrested alive. Questions about the prosecution, the legal process, what happens next? Joe Tamburino is our legal analyst. He's with us in studio to talk a little bit about what happens here. And Joe, let's start with the big question, which I think when you see in the morning Hennepin County Attorney Mary Moriarty announcing the state charges, announcing that she's going to convene a grand jury to charge with first degree murder, to indict on first degree murder, why does the federal government step in?
Well, thanks, Jason, for having me on. Because they have more power. They have more ability to charge. The penalties are greater because obviously in the federal case, they could give the death penalty. But, I mean, you know, let's read between the lines right here, which is even though this was completely at the beginning, local law enforcement who did a fabulous job and the state troopers, when the feds came in, and rightfully so, they took over. And now he's in custody with the U.S. Marshals, and I can almost guarantee he's not going to be making a state court appearance anytime soon. It's going to be a long time before he gets to state court, if ever.
There's so much evidence here, and we've seen federal court on high-profile cases before in Minnesota. One negative is we have a zero chance of this being a public trial, which I think would have done a lot for sort of the wackos and all the crazy conspiracy stuff that people were floating this weekend, because federal court is not going to be audio or televised, right?
Well, it's a public trial. Anybody could go there.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a public trial,
yes.
But it's not going to be televised. That's correct, because the U.S. Supreme Court, they make the rules for all federal courts, and they have consistently said no TVs, no recording devices, nothing like that in their courts.
Vance Belter is in federal custody. He was charged with stalking. He was charged with murder. What's different in a federal case? Is it different level of prosecutors? Is it different resources? What's different than a state case?
Well, it's not really a different level of prosecutors. It's a different kind. I can tell you in terms of, you know, prosecutors who do murder cases, rape cases, child abuse cases, you're going to find the most experienced ones and proficient ones actually in state court. Because in the federal system,
that's what they do.
That's
right?
What they do. Yeah. In the federal system, you know, it's a lot of drug cases. It's a
gang, racketeering, that
right.
sort of stuff.
Rarely do you see a murder case in federal court. Now, the reason why you're getting one here is because the feds came in and said, we have jurisdiction specifically because he was stalking these people and he was using the internet to do that. Basically, they took the same type of criminal charges that they issued against Luigi Mangione in December in order to declare federal jurisdiction here. So that's how the feds are coming in.
Under the Biden administration, the federal government was not seeking the death penalty. That has changed under the Trump administration. They've said they're seeking the death penalty with Luigi Mangione. Do you expect the same here?
Yes. I mean, if you're going for the death penalty for Mr. Mangione, who, you know, obviously a tragic situation, who is accused and charged with killing the CEO from United Health, that's one person. Why wouldn't Attorney General Bondi not go for the death penalty here when it, you know, from what the federal authorities have said, this person has, we know, according to the charges, if they're true, he's killed two people already. He severely injured two others, and perhaps he could have killed at least two more. Yeah. So, of course, you're going to go for the death penalty.
Joe Tamburino with us. When you look at this particular prosecution, and frankly, I was surprised at the level of detail they shared today, and I appreciate it. I think a lot of us are on edge to get so much information about what was going on and the heroic action of law enforcement in intervening.
Right.
For me, was reassuring. Were you surprised at the level of detail? I mean, the FBI affidavit is rather complete for only 2 days in.
Yes, but I was happy about it because I think Joe Thompson, who I've had cases with over the years, he's a very good prosecutor. And, you know, in a way, he would be a great actual U.S. attorney, even though he's acting as one now because the other one is going to be coming in. But, you know, Mr. Thompson knows what he's doing. He is a trial attorney. He's presented many cases to a jury. So I think the way he laid everything out today was sort of like an opening statement at a trial. And it really was a breath of fresh air to see the United States government come in and give a kind of press conference like they gave today, because usually they're pretty tight-lipped.
It was good. I appreciate it. Joe, we appreciate you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Joe Tamburino with us on the D Rush Hour News headline, The Lead. We also talked to Chris Saliza because this is making national news. This is the lead story on every newspaper, every website, every network newscast all around the country, with the question about what does this say about our level of discourse? And Chris really providing some insight on political violence. Is it up or does it just feel like it's up?
Co-Republican headquarters. The DNC office in Arizona is shot at with pellets and bullets. 2022, Paul Pelosi is attacked in the San Francisco home he shares with former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Obviously, Donald Trump is, there are two attempted assassinations against Donald Trump. Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, is the subject of the kidnapping plot. The Capitol, U.S. Capitol on January 6th, obviously the riot that went on there. The two Israeli staffers that killed outside the Israeli museum in D.C. So, yes, there is more of this. The U.S. Capitol police keep track of all threats made to made at or to elect federally elected officials. In 2024, that number was 9,474. In 2017, just by way of comparison, so 7 years prior, it was about a third that high. So it's not just Minnesota. It's not just this year. It is a clear trend.
Going after like part-time state representatives and state senators is, and not just yours, going after four different suburbs, four different people that he got to that we know of. I mean, that is next level, getting down to your neighbors that you're going after.
It is. I mean, we hear more about it when it's a, you know, a bigger national figure. But look, I think, and I just want to make one quick point, if I might. I think too many people lay this at the feet of Donald Trump. If I'm doing a blame pie, I think Donald Trump gets more blame than any other figure over the last decade for providing the permission structure for this kind of rhetoric, and people sometimes take rhetoric and take it way, way, way too far. But I don't think he's the only one. Like, you know, the internet, social media, the kind of like the ability to look up, how do I make a bomb? Where do I buy a gun? I mean, all of this stuff is now at your fingertips. So I don't think it's just him. And unfortunately, I don't know what gets us all on the same page on this.
Yeah, concerning. Chris Saliza. We'll upload a whole conversation I had with Chris onto our podcast page, which you can find at the Drive Time with To Russia podcast. According to the U.S. Capitol Police, 9,000, almost 9,500 concerning statements or direct threats made to elected officials on the federal level last year, up from 8,000. 9,500, up from 8,000. And it was triple the number of threats made in 2017. We do have a problem. And to that end, Blois Olson, in his Morning Take newsletter, said that a solution has to start with us looking at the way we talk about things. And Blois saying he is going to start with analyzing the way he talks about politics. I asked Blois what he meant by that.
I look at myself, and it's the people we don't see that listen to media, that read social media, that are clearly triggered. We see the people who respond, but I think there's an audience out there that I have to consider not giving them a reason to respond and not be quick to get their adrenaline up. And I don't need the adrenaline rush. I think even last week I was critical of the Star Tribune, and I still think it was a fair criticism, but it's the people who take that and then run into some conspiracy theory, or they kind of, I'll just say it, they radicalize themselves by theories that are so far gone. And I just look at this alleged murder and you say, at some point, a switch flipped. What was it? And I don't ever want to be considered for instigating somebody's brain going haywire and doing something like this.
Yeah. Blois Olson. The great insight there. I'm feeling the same way about myself. It's 5:20. We'll continue to follow developments if they pop up, but I got other stories, lots going on, including Young Joni, one of the most popular restaurants, award-winning restaurants in Minnesota. News today that they are closing. What is going on with that? I'll talk about that and more as we do the D Rush Hour. News headlines, page 2 in a minute. D Rush Hour news headlines. And we begin with a little bit of breaking news that just came out this afternoon from the restaurant scene. Young Joni, one of the most award-winning restaurants in the state of Minnesota, has announced that it will soon close. Well, door closed, shutter down. Young Joni, Star Tribune, reporting some of the details about a rent dispute between Young Joni and its landlord. Ann Kim announcing today that she will close this restaurant September 14th. It opened in 2016. It won Ann Kim the James Beard Award. Tonight, the James Beard Awards are being presented in Chicago. The dispute was about rent. There was a lawsuit filed in court on June 19th asking for about $140,000 of late charges, interest, rent. And basically what was happening is the landlord, the Lander Group, based in Minnesota, signed a really lowball rent deal in Northeast Minneapolis. Well, the restaurant had success. They were trying to move the rent up to market rate. But if you're Young Joni, you're like, well, market rate is not like that's not the numbers don't work. That's not how it works. No one's given exact details of what the numbers are. No word as to whether Young Joni will try to find a new location or if Ann Kim is just throwing in the towel. But the plan is to be open until September 14th. American women are waiting longer than ever before to have children. This story from ABC News, a new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention study. So the average age for all U.S. mothers giving birth is almost 30 years old, 29.6. It was 28.7 in 2016. Now, it's been moving up year after year for decades, since 1970, when the average first-time mother was just 21.4 years old. There are big geographic differences and demographic differences. So in the large metro areas, women tend to have their first child at 28.5, while those in the most rural areas start nearly 4 years earlier at 24.8. There's nothing to do. Nothing else to do. What are you going to do? We had our first kid at 28, 29. Yeah, right in there. Metro, classic metro people. What can I tell you? It survived a fire, a collapse, and the escape of a notorious bank run. This is a fantastic story in the Pioneer Press talking about the Rock Island Swing Bridge. The Rock Island Swing Bridge has a new chapter. A new chapter starting soon. It's 130 years old. It's been in Dakota County since there were horse-drawn carriages. That notorious bank robber is Dellinger. Pretty crazy history of this bridge, but now it has nearly half a million dollar upgrade. Yeah, pretty cool. Tons of LED lights, so they're going to do like light shows now. $560,000 upgrade. Nightly light shows that run every quarter hour from 7 to 10 p.m. through the summer. Isn't that cool? This bridge juts out in Invergrove Heights. It's a beautiful park in Invergrove Heights, right over the Mississippi River. But pretty fun. They can program it all depending, you know, you can make it Vikings colors when the Vikings go to the Super Bowl. No? Come on, Cook. How about some Yeah, maybe it's time to flush the toilet with our next story. You can flush the Vikings' chances. Go ahead, flush it again. Terrible. How dare you? News from the Washington Post that you are cleaning your toilet wrong. I just say, first of all, like Dan Cook, do you even clean your toilet?
Why would you ask something
Of course
I clean my toilet. What kind of slob do you take me for?
We ask our kids this because, you know, they're disgusting. So, not that you're disgusting, but, you know.
Kind of sounds like that's what you're implying.
So, the primary toilet in your home should be cleaned once a week. I was sort of amused by the Washington Post step-by-step instructions. It's a six-step program. Number one, dry dust the exterior. Number two, apply the cleaner to the bowl. Number three, clean the tank and the flusher. So like a little cleaning wipe to clean the thing you push that makes it go flush. Clean the seat and the ring. I do that. Clean the base or the skirt, the floor and the walls. Yeah, you know what? I'm not getting on my hands and knees. I'm not doing it. And I'll tell you what, I'm certainly not going to clean the teenage boy's toilet. The base of that thing.
Oof.
And then the last step is to clean the bowl. So there you go. The toilets you don't use as often, they say you should clean once a month because sort of bacteria in the air just kind of gets down there. And when you flush, it goes, it kind of splashes up. That's the D Rush Hour News headline. Look, you knew we couldn't do 3 hours of hard breaking news. This show was going to go for the toilet at some point. And we're going to keep it in the toilet with Dave Schwartz, who will join us in just a couple minutes to talk sports here on CCO.